Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Shift Happens. I'm your host, Alana Brunel. And today is a two-part conversation. If you have not listened to the first part of my conversation with Shree, please go back to that episode and check it out. But we are going to be continuing that conversation today. And so I will just pick up where we left off and kind of start with your leadership style. Shree, when we look at the team behind Nile, we are a team of veterans, people that have helped shape the industry that we are currently playing into. How did you make hiring decisions when it came to people that were going to now reinvent this network?
Well, that's a very good question because, over the last 30 years, I have not delivered anything. It's the people who deliver. My biggest joy I get is to bring in best people, bring in the right people. And there's no shortcut there. First of all, when you're trying to change the paradigm of an existing 30, 35, 40-year-old technology or methods, you have to talk to people who understand the current approaches, traditional approaches of building products, but at the same time have a deep conviction that this could change. This needs to change in the context of outcome. Again, I keep coming back to the outcomes. The outcome is delivering a service. If they come from the traditional world and understand the complexity, but at the same time, they appreciate that this should not be that way. This need not be that way. This should not be that way. All we need is the end customers to enjoy the outcome of availability, security, coverage, performance, etc. So both are very important. You need to have the expertise of the last 30, 40 years of the industry, but at the same time, you need to believe in the outcome-based approach. When you match these two, then it's very easy to look for the other things about, attitude, the grit, because, startups are not easy. They seem to be a lot of fun, but they're not easy. Whether the person has the ambition to solve difficult problems, which have not been solved so far. So when you go through this process of hiring the people with the right background, but at the same time having the belief system that the paradigm needs to change, the rest of it is just the process of figuring the other traits out, if you will.
Shree, what do you do personally in your team to make sure that your teammates aren't defaulting to their old ways?
That's been very difficult because the first thing we do is when we bring in people, we go through an orientation, which is talking about the core tenets. We call them as service tenets of Nile. And we walk them through with different examples. We just have four principles. But each of the principles have many examples of how we need to think, how we have done it, or how we are doing it. And then throughout the journey of product development or a feature development, we have a checklist of various kinds. For example, we make sure that when it comes to configuration, nobody's typing in the command line interfaces, which is what the traditional boxes do. So that's just a rule we have, and that makes the innovation done differently now. We also have a checklist around you need to be secure. So these are some of the practices you have to follow. We also have a tenet around availability, and there are some principles you have to follow. So we've put in a little bit of structure. The outcomes are availability, performance, security, coverage, etc. And around those four or five basic dimensions, we put, like engineers like to be very clear, black and white, and we put a bunch of checklists, and over time people get used to it, and they're really focusing on the outcomes and working backwards to see how do we address those outcomes through the basic engineering techniques. So that's the way we've done it. And, every now and then I have an engineer who comes up and says, hey, look, we could solve it very fast, but we have to go with this method, which doesn't align to the service model. And we say, no, let's take the time you need to take. I don't need to rush into this and break the fundamental core tenets by which the engineering process, engineering service has been built. Hopefully that makes sense to you. And this has not been easy because, you've got to get people. People like the concepts. People like the outcome-based approach. But when you walk them through the whole journey of building it, It is tedious. You have to innovate. You have to be creative. And you have to solve the similar problems in a completely different way, which is a service model. So it's challenging, and it's been a lot of fun.
How can engineering leads like you actually give confidence back to their own employees and really encourage them to like continue on this almost like open arms approach to welcoming innovation?
You know, it's not that difficult, right? When you don't overwhelm engineers, but you keep your outcome-based approach. I can keep coming back to those four or five outcome-based approach for a service model, and you hang on to that tightly, but then you empower the people to do it the style and the approach they want, as long as they're focusing on the outcome, then they feel that they're empowered, they have the freedom to create and innovate, but keeping the outcome in mind. Usually they're very inspired because we're not asking them to solve it in a particular way, but we are actually making sure that they do not forget the four or five core principles around a service model. So as long as you keep it simple and say, hey, these are the four or five principles of service model, you cannot break those. You can innovate as much as you want, as long as you don't break these, then you know, you're getting what you want for the business outcome, but at the same time, you're not really constraining them on how they solve the problem.
When prepping for this podcast, you know, you and I were exchanging notes, and on your notes, you have something that says, startups are a great equalizer. Can you explain what that means?
Well, interesting. It doesn't matter what you did in the past. You might have been a CEO, you might have been an EVP, SVP, or you might have been an inventor, you might have been a distinguished engineer. When you join a startup, it just, everybody's equal. Everybody has the same opportunity to solve problems. It is a platform for anybody who comes into the startup because they've come with a singular goal of believing in the business outcome and working towards solving for that business outcomes. So it is an equalizer. You know, the past history doesn't count as much as the future deliverables for you. And that applies for me as well. You know, in 2019, when I started this journey, I had to make up my mind and I said, you know what, I have to play the role of a 1998, because that's when I used to be an engineer. And right now I'm in a 2006, I'm like a director. What I'm really trying to say is you have to play the role, and that's what a startup is, an equalizer, because everybody who joins the company has an equal opportunity, regardless of what they did in their past, to solve to the outcomes of the company.
I feel like in order to also almost be okay with that approach, you yourself have to have a certain personality type. So do you find that like the people that you hire on your team, they're almost like the certain set of people that are separate than, you know, maybe your past times you're in leadership?
I think it comes down to people are all good, generally speaking. That's my belief. You really have to figure out what culture you want in the company. We have a very grounded culture in engineering. People don't tout. People don't brag. That raises the bar every day. Because when people accomplish difficult tasks and they don't talk about it a lot, that just puts the bar higher and higher and higher. And it also breeds a culture of results-oriented, credible quality, speed. And I have a phrase in my team which goes, quantity with quality, but speed is what defines a startup. You can deliver a lot, and you have to deliver with the highest quality, but you got to deliver in a short time frame. So when you create that concept, then people are more humble, and they're trying to focus on, you know, how can I make myself better every single day?
I think this is a great segue into your leadership philosophy tenets, and starting at number one. Very similar to what you just said, you like to give people benefit of the doubt when looking at how they behave in the workplace. So can you speak to that a little bit?
Well, you know, I just have this foundational belief that you should not judge people based on either their looks, religion, or how they communicate, etc.
Yeah.
You always have to assume that they have good to offer. You know, not getting into a judgment actually has helped me quite a bit to always hope for the most and the best from every individual. And I take it upon myself to see what do I need to do, what environment I need to create so that each individual can give their best to the success of the company. And that's where the benefit of doubt comes. You never judge. You never rush to a conclusion about a person. You always ask. You experience people rather than judge.
Yeah, Sri, like in my time with working with you, it's actually been pretty awesome to see like a higher level leader often look at the little guy and give the little guy an opportunity to showcase what they know and what they can grow in. I mean, for our listeners that don't know this, Sri started our first internship program within the company, and it's been really cool to see like how those individuals have grown and moved on. So maybe Sri, like what attracts you to doing something like that? And what's the inspiration behind that?
Well, I enjoy building products and building people. That's what I've been doing all my life. And I don't build it myself. I build it through people. It gives me a personal joy to see what can I do to get the best out of people and what can I learn from them. And when I go with that approach, it just makes it a lot of fun. It just makes it a lot of fun. And thank you for that comment on the interns, because I really, really enjoyed taking care of the interns, making sure they have a great experience, and making sure they're given all the exposure so that when they come back to a corporation, when they come back to work, they're looking forward to join the industry and make the industry better rather than coming here and doing a small project and walking away.
Another thing I want to highlight on your list is that you feel as though no matter the level that you get to, you still need to be close to the expertise in the industry. Speak to that as well.
Yeah, so I always told my leaders when I was at Cisco and other places, you need to be able to roll up your sleeves when there is a need, and you need to be able to roll down your sleeves. So empowerment is important, but at the same time, if you do not understand the function you're leading, you cannot appreciate people's work. So I have this belief that I should be able to understand the work of the people in the team. That's the only way I demonstrate my respect for them. Respect for their work, and to understand the work, what they have done, I need to be also able to appreciate it and maybe not do all of it, but do some of it. So it's because of that belief, it just happens that I need to be able to roll up my sleeves, and people in my team recognize that. Obviously, they want me away and, not to help them that much. And when there's a crisis, when there is a situation which is untenable, I believe that I need to be more deeply involved than anybody else to take personal responsibility for it, to make sure that I demonstrate that I'm there through the pain of any shortcomings we have, whether it's on a schedule, whether it's on a difficult problem, and so on and so forth. So it's just being there, being empathetic, being fully engaging. It's mandatory for every leader of their function, and of course for the CEO with the whole company.
Sri, also speak to this healthy level of paranoia that you think is necessary in order to be a good leader.
Yeah, so I was a big fan of a book called Only Paranoid Survive by Andy Grove, who's the founder of Intel. I'm just a big believer in it. You know, you can never assume that you're the best. You should never conclude that you're doing the best. You always have to introspect. You always have to be fearful that you're not meshing up to the expectation of your customers. And that'll always keep you actively thinking on what you could do better, either on innovation or in just demonstrating good behaviors or improving processes or what have you. So healthy paranoia is the only way I've learned to be humble, to be always looking for learning from others. And at the same time, have a deep introspection of mistakes I make, because we're all humans. We all make mistakes. But the more important thing is to recognize that you made a mistake and be a little more open and public about accepting your mistakes, especially with your team. And that actually makes them feel more comfortable and makes them also follow the same principles that making mistakes is human, but acknowledging it and course correcting it is a lot more a better characteristics of a person. So I try to emulate those things, and my team also absolutely follows those.
Sri, I think that you've given so much great advice, and I know you have so many tenets, and I promise I'll get it in some sort of blog so that everyone can learn all of Sri's leadership lessons. But I want to wrap up with some of your parting advice. You know, the tech landscape is so competitive. Any advice you have for leaders that still want to lead like very impactful teams when it feels like there's a lot of pressure on them?
You know, for leaders, you have to serve your team, you know, enabling your team, being a servant leader, ensuring that you understand what they do, having empathy, deeply engaging with people. Personally, I've never found a substitute for that. That has worked for me all the time, and I think it'll work for everybody. But that requires a lot of hard work. You need to believe in those things. And unless you believe in those, you will not do it. And for engineers, at least I haven't found a shortcut to success. So if you like some technology, you have to invest the time to learn it. At least making things work is a lot of fun, but it's not easy either, which is very different from, you know, writing some software, building some hardware. But making it work, seeing it work in a customer deployment, making customers happy with the work you do is what you need to aim for. The rest of it is means to an end. And that's when you will start learning and growing and appreciating a lot more about technology and products and eventually the customers you serve.
That's so great. Well, thank you so much, Sri, for joining Shift Happens. If people want to reach out to you to talk about Nile, talk about your leadership philosophy, get any advice on engineering, where can they reach out to you?
I'm on LinkedIn. I check LinkedIn almost every day. So I am me at LinkedIn. I'll be very happy to spend time, and I enjoy doing it.
Well, listeners, thank you so much for joining us. And we will see you guys on the next episode of Shift Happens.